Clean Slate Protocol 2.0 by Annie D. Scaramouche. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. So, what's up with you and Chekas? Rocket says. Tony, whose elbows deep inside the base of the quantum platform, replies, Space references don't work down here, Paddington. That's a bit of a cheap shot, so Tony fully expects and receives Rocket's knocking him on the head with a screwdriver. Hey, watch it. Don't play dumb, Stock. When Tony looks up, Rocket is sitting on the upper frame of the platform, his feet and tail swinging in the air underneath him. I know actual pros in that arena. I bet you do. The captain. Rocket inclines his head in Steve's direction. There are currently three people in the repurposed hangar. Tony and Rocket, who are working on the platform, and Steve, who is halfway towards the exit and is wearing the checkered plaid shirt that's apparently earned him Rocket's moniker. Steve, Tony calls out. Steve turns, and his gaze meets Tony's expectantly. No pickles, yeah? Steve checks his left hand, where a post-it note of Tony's scribbled list is stuck to the palm. On both? Yeah, Tony says. Oh, and some ice cream while you're at it. Got it, Steve nods, and off he goes. See that, Rocket says, once Steve's disappeared from view. What's up with that? If I'm going to stay on this weird backwater planet long enough to save half the universe, I need nourishment. Food for one, and tales of other people's idiocy for the other. He bail on you and the kids, or what? Tony fumbles with the cable. What? That type's universal, Rocket nods sagely. Knocks you up, leaves you hanging. No wonder Red's leading the team now. Steve did not knock me up, Tony says irritably. It was a team thing. We were a team and then we weren't. Difference of opinion, that's all. Oh, so it was about this Terran team, the Avengers, right? The lot of you split up? Yes, exactly. Which is why Cap's treating everyone else in this team of yours the same, and not just you specifically. Sure, yeah, makes sense. Tony eyes Rocket warily, but the damn space raccoon just grins at him, an unnerving flash of tiny teeth in a pointed snout. He doesn't mean anything by the question, but it's annoying that of all the things about Earth that Rocket could be curious about, and there are very few things he's shown interest in, which has rankled at Tony, it'd have to be this. But Rocket doesn't have context. Of everyone in this building, he probably has the least context of what the Avengers were and what it meant for all of them when they fell apart. That lack of context means that Rocket would probably mock the entire thing, call them dumbasses for letting personal stances get in the way of what the Avengers were supposed to be. 7 years on, Tony would agree that the episode does deserve to be mocked. Not because it didn't matter, because it did. The Accords, Ross, Barnes, and Zemo were all kindling under a trigger of a ticking clock, and when it blew up, it merely brought to full light how tenuously the Avengers had been held together. Bruce even said so. That first time the original team were together in the same place, they were a time bomb, waiting to go off. And they did. But that's not the whole story, either. Bruce and Thor weren't even there when the Accords hit them. Clint got involved late. Wanda, Vision, Sam, and Rhodey got absorbed into a dynamic that had already settled in place. Fact is, Tony and Steve were in the driver's seat, two pairs of hands on the single steering wheel, and so off they crashed. Tony didn't return to the compound 2 days ago to talk about any of this. The handshake with Steve was all they needed to get back on track. And none of the Avengers have been interested in bringing up old history. Because why should they? Even Clint, when Natasha finally dragged him back to base this morning, merely nodded at Tony when they saw each other. Everyone knows that the stakes they're facing are greater than everything that's happened before, just as Tony knew they'd be from the very beginning. The team fell apart because of me and Steve, Tony says. The two of us on either side of a line, with everyone else having to take sides. Ah, Rocket nods. He knocked you up and then bailed. For crying out. You're not Kylosian. You know what a metaphor is. Rocket jumps down, joining Tony in the pit to correct a bolt connection. What's that thing you said back then? You needed him and he wasn't there? He's making up for that now, ain't he? Giving you everything you need, including two burgers with everything on it except pickles, plus large fries and ice cream. Steve gets food for everyone. Oh, does he? My mistake. I'm sure both of you stare at everyone else the same amount, too. Rocket cackles when Tony narrows his eyes at him. Don't forget, Quill was on my crew, so I know what Terrans look like when you get frisky. All that staring at each other's body parts. What a waste of energy. For crying out, me and Steve were not like that. Rocket winks. Sure you weren't. Tony crosses his arms while Rocket gets busy doing him the pleasure of double-checking everything Tony's been working on for the past half hour. I'm not convinced you don't have space rabies, Tony mutters. Nice, Rocket says. That the best you got? Don't know. Was kind of expecting you'd say something about how your team wouldn't have been so stupid as to split up like we did. No, we definitely would. Actually did once or twice. Rocket somber for a moment before adding with a forced lightness that Tony sadly recognizes. Just that whenever we got back together, it wasn't what it was before. Can't put an engine back together exactly the same, right? Rocket's comment is less annoying for its bringing up the past and more annoying for how it shoved to the forefront a thought that Tony's been trying not to think too closely about. Rocket's right, of course. Steve isn't the same person that Tony chewed out 5 years ago, nor is he the person who struck the goddamn shield into Tony's chest plate 2 years before that, nor is he the person who smiled, awkward but grateful, when Tony gave him that first Stark-made Captain America tactical suit to replace the shield one he'd been using. These 5 years have done a number on all of them. This is the first time in ages that the original team has gathered together, yet there's little sense of a reunion, let alone nostalgia. Like the Chitauri invasion that got the party started in the first place, it's necessity and desperation that have them huddling close. The difference between then and now is that all of them have since survived the worst, together as well as apart. They know this about each other, and with that knowledge, they can stand together, their eyes on the greatest hopeful prize of all. The above is all true for Steve as well, but that's not why he's acting the way he is around Tony. It's not why Steve's quieter now, listening for long stretches while Tony talks out idea after idea, sometimes only getting a useful golden nugget or two from hour-long tangents. It's not why, when Tony jokingly suggested that Steve get a hairband for his do, Steve only smiled and shrugged. It's not why Steve goes for snack runs whenever Tony asks. It's not why, the first night after Tony returned to the compound with a couple of bags in tow, Steve told him, "You can use your old room if you want to." "It's fine, I'll just stay wherever," Tony had replied. "Toss a sheet on a flat surface, I'm good." "Check your room first," Steve had said. "If it's a mess, there's room down here." It's only afterward, when Tony was lying in his old bed and about to nod off, that he remembered none of them knew he was coming, yet the sheets he was lying on were freshly laundered. Oh, and that Steve had disappeared for a stretch of time before dinner. That was a thing that happened and kept happening. If this were a couple of years ago, Tony would probably, nay, definitely, be pissed at Steve about it. How dare Steve try to do this, whatever it is he's doing? If he thinks that Tony needs special handling, fuck off. If he thinks he's trying to square the situation, that's futile and stupid, because if there's such a thing as a scale of balance between them, upon which they measure their actions and reactions and unactions toward each other, it would forever be tipped in an Escher configuration of madness and without either of them in favor. But that was then, and this is now. Tony shed that anger like old skin, sluiced it right off. He knows that he can get worked up about it again if he thinks too hard about Rhodey or Peter, but as is the case, the stakes are high. This second Dust Bowl era has been shitty for everyone, and Tony needs to put his money where his mouth has been all these years to get it done. Steve can do whatever he likes. Tony doesn't mean that in a dismissive way. Steve has always done what he likes, and it just so happens that this is what he's decided to do right now, which is helpful instead of hindering. Tony figured out ages ago that he'd never truly understood Steve, so he's just relieved that they're on the same page this time, no matter what it took for them to get here. That's all. Anyway, if Tony had to make sense of Steve's behavior, which he doesn't, it's probably because Steve's just as tired as Tony is. There. That's a good faith reading, and one most likely to be correct. Tony's learning something after all. There it is, Rocket says, clambering back up the frame. His ears twitch, and a second or so after that, there's the approaching rumble of Steve's motorbike. Hey, break time. My back is killing me. How about we take a break from the tunnel, get back to rendering the suits, Tony says. Works for me, Rocket says. We should check in with the Green Professor anyway. Tony glances at his watch, bemused at the passage of time. He hasn't been on workshop binges for a while, thanks to his having a wriggling munchkin miss, who makes greater demands of his time, not that he'd complain. Even so, the heist prep work that they've been up to these past 2 days isn't the same as ye old blackout marathons. It's way more of a group effort. Tony's not by himself at the frontier of advanced tech, and his brain is able to check out much quicker. It's a new era. While Rocket welcomes Steve's return with edible goods, Tony pulls out his phone. There are no new messages from Morgan since this morning, but he types out a quick missive anyway, reminding her to always take a break from playing to harass her mom. Hey, get in here, Tony says, getting an idea. He waves at Steve and Rocket to get in the frame. A challenge, since Rocket refuses to stand on anyone who isn't Bruce. Is that for Morgan? Steve gamely leans towards Tony's side while Tony takes a snapshot of the three of them. Steve smells of grease and motor fumes, though that's probably still more attractive than what Tony smells like after hours wrestling cables. Say hi for me, Steve adds. Wait, you have an actual kid? Rocket says. Yes, mine, Tony says, eyeballing Rocket meaningfully. He opens a hand, accepting the paper bag that Steve gives him, but with the other hand keeps typing. Just telling her I'm having a good time at Avengers camp. Would love to hear Pepper try to explain you to her. You're working with sapient raccoon-shaped alien is hardly the most outlandish detail of your life, Steve says. Unfortunately true. Tony shakes the bag in his hand. No pickles? No pickles, Steve confirms. They had a special on Jell-O with ice cream, so that's in there too. But the rest of the ice cream's going upstairs, if you want to top up. Get something for yourself? I got a range of flavors, but I find it best not to get too attached to any specific one, considering the company. Very zen of you, Tony says with a nod. And thanks for lunch. No problem, Steve says, smiling warmly. It's a good smile, less composed from the one that Tony just sent to Morgan, though no less friendly. It used to be tricky to parse Steve's smiles, which tended to be as impenetrable as his old propaganda posters. Irritation and anger were easy enough to recognize in the man, but everything else usually left Tony on the back foot. And he'd often resorted to checking Natasha for hints. But Tony hasn't needed to do much second-guessing these past few days. He's gotten nothing but warmth from Steve the moment he drove up in his car, which means that either Tony's getting better at reading him, not likely, or that Steve's just being like that, letting himself be easily read, if that's possible. It makes Tony's skin prickle a little, reminding him of how he used to show either too much or not enough of himself to the other Avengers, and tended to get the timing wrong on both, resulting in awkwardness and or antagonism. Rhodey used to chalk it up to Tony not having enough friends to practice on beforehand. What's wrong? Steve asks. Tony startles out of his thoughts. Nothing, he says automatically. Steve nods a little, his expression thoughtful, as though he's going to call Rhodey to come down to check on him, which would be even worse. So Tony says quickly, just thinking that maybe I never really got the hang of working on a team until now. Not really, really. It's not a jab, but Steve flinches anyway, the tiniest flicker across his handsome face that Tony wouldn't have spotted if he weren't looking so closely. Tony braces himself, wary as always, but Steve just says, it's not easy when there's so many strong personalities gathered together, butting heads. You said but, Tony says. I do sometimes, Steve agrees. Eat up, that's going to get cold. Behind Steve, Rocket mimes a large stomach. Knocked up, he mouths. Steve's eyebrows go up at whatever is happening on Tony's face. Steve quickly turns to look at Rocket, who's no longer making that shape, thank God, before turning back to Tony. Ignore that, Tony says, with a slightly manic grin. Right, Steve says slowly. Seriously? Rocket exclaims. Are you absolutely sure you guys never fucked? Not even once? Whoa! Tony barks, while Steve's head snaps back in surprise. That is not helpful, and the ice cream's melting. Oh, we can't have that, Rocket says, ripping the bag apart with his tiny hands. But I gotta know. No, Tony says sharply. He turns to Steve, talking quickly. Sorry, this has nothing to do with anything. He just thinks he's being funny. It's okay. Steve looks surprised but shakes his head. I can see how that would... Tony frowns. Can see how what would what? How it might look. Steve clears his throat. What with how we... are? Exactly, Rocket says. People do joke about the Avengers' divorce, Steve points out. The great German custody battle. Yeah, right. Tony's heard of those jokes too, though it's surreal as hell to hear Steve acknowledge them, just as it's unsettling to know that Steve's aware of how different things are between them now. Well, of course he's aware. But Tony didn't think he was aware enough to know that it's worth commenting on. But they're just jokes. I'm not offended, Steve says. You don't need to be worried. I'm not. That's good. Your ice cream's melting, Rocket says. Just saying. Steve makes his exit after telling them he's going upstairs to check on Natasha's logistics planning. It's only once he's gone that Tony relaxes and turns an exasperated snarl in Rocket's direction. That was not cool. Tony's heart is beating pretty quickly, though there's no reason for it. There was no fight. Steve didn't react badly, and people have been making those kinds of jokes for years. Not directly to their faces, but still. Don't do that again. I'm a trash panda. What the hell do I know? Rocket says. Why is it not cool anyway? I thought you said all that past drama was done and dealt with. Because eat your goddamned ice cream, that's why. Tomorrow they're going to do the first time jump test with Clint. If it fails, it's troubleshooting time. But if it succeeds, it's onward through the postmortem with the suit, the tunnel, and making sure that Clint's molecular structure isn't going to spontaneously disintegrate. That's tomorrow. Tonight, there's dinner. Tonight, 7 Avengers and 3 honorary Avengers are piled in the meeting room that's become their command center, sorting through the bags of food that Scott and Rhodey brought back from their trip into the city. There's lively chatter as debates are had and exchanges are made, but it's a far cry from the old days of merrymaking. One need only look at Thor to see it clearly. He's still mostly keeping to himself, his shade staying on, and only talking to people if they talk to him. I don't need to eat as much as you do, Nebula says, and there are still repairs that need to be done on the auxiliary pod. You can do that later. Tony scans the spread that the others are putting on the table, Bruce acting as their head of catering, while Clint steals handfuls of nachos before the boxes are even all the way open. Okay, sure, maybe Mexican isn't your thing. But how about popcorn? You like the popcorn, right? Nebula's dark stare doesn't waver. The popcorn wasn't bad. Great, I'll get you a bowl, and you'll sit with us. Tony points at a chair, if you can spare the time. Nebula stiffly makes her way to the chair, which Tony takes as a win, and has him sprinting off for the kitchen. Moving through the connecting door, he almost runs into Natasha, who's moving in the other direction. She says, with top-notch disgruntlement, "There's not enough cutlery. I know there was more than enough for everyone a day ago, but now this." She waves the few forks and knives she's clutching in both hands at him. "Why?" "I swear that I've been putting them in the dishwasher," Tony says. "At least, as far as I can remember." Natasha eyeballs him, but moves past without extra comment. She also ducks around Steve, who's entering the kitchen as well. The door swings shut behind him. "What are you looking for?" Tony asks. "Trash bag," Steve says. "You?" "Making popcorn for the blue lady," Tony says, checking one cabinet after another. "I saw an unpopped bag that... don't tell me it's already gone." "No, it's here." Steve moves around him to pull open an upper cabinet from which he plucks a bag. "There you go." "Thanks." Tony grimaces internally at himself. "It's just thanks. But Rocket's gone and made him feel self-conscious about it." He's been saying it a lot to Steve lately, hasn't he? He can't not say it, because he should save being rude for when it counts. But it's not like he's asking Steve to be constantly available and helpful everywhere he turns. "A bowl?" Steve pulls a large one out from a lower cabinet. "That enough?" "Yeah, that's good." Steve has the trash bag in his hand, but he comes around the counter to stay by Tony's side and brace the bowl while Tony pours the kernels into it. "It's just Steve being useful, that's all." "Giving you everything you need," Rocket's voice says in Tony's head. Rocket asked Tony earlier why he shouldn't joke about Tony and Steve being like that. The real answer, the one that Tony knew better than to tell him, is that the past needs to stay in the past in order for this team-up to work. All those old, non-teamwork conducive feelings need to be set aside. Petty squabbles, major disputes, angry grudges, and dumb crushes, all in equal measure set aside. "Do you want to put salt on it?" Steve asks. "I think it already comes with..." Tony peers at the label on the empty bag. "Okay, it doesn't, but whatever. It tasted fine yesterday. 2 minutes." "Okay. 2 minutes. Steve puts the bowl in the microwave and punches the buttons. Tony watches the bowl turn, frowning. That seems like a lot. Pretty sure she won't need help finishing it. "Ha, yeah, okay." Here they are, in a kitchen, standing side by side as they watch a bowl of popcorn pop. Almost domestic, except they didn't do much of this kind of thing back during their tower days. Not just the two of them, anyway. Thank goodness for that, too, or Tony's dumb crush on Steve would have gotten out of hand. It makes Tony shudder to think how much more awful it would have been if the Avengers split up while Steve knew that Tony had a thing for him. Not that it was an actual thing of note, because it's just what Tony does. He gets attached to people with little consideration of how they feel, and it's only in some cases, Rhodey, Happy, and Pepper, mostly, that the arrangement played out okay for everyone involved. He thought that seeing Steve again, let alone working with him again, would be more difficult, but it hasn't been. And Tony credits how they're both bringing lessons learned to the table, like functioning adults and everything. "Tony, it's done," Steve says. Tony blinks. "Right." He opens the microwave and Steve helps take the bowl out. "Thinking hard," Steve says, quietly teasing. "Are you worried about the plan or the test tomorrow?" "Would be more worried about the plan once we actually have one." Tony glances over at Steve, and there it is. That's what Rocket was talking about. Steve's watching Tony closely, but not in the way that someone does when they're waiting for Tony to trip on his own feet. He's watching Tony as if he's a damned bowl of popcorn, ready to scoop up any wayward popcorn fluff that spills out. "I appreciate it, but you don't need to do this," Tony says. Steve looks at the bowl. "The popcorn?" "I'm not mad anymore. I'm not going to bite your head off if you don't feel like picking up duct tape from the hardware store. We got the job. We know what needs to be done, and that's more than enough. You shouldn't feel like you need to make it up to me by doing all this. Steve doesn't seem offended. If anything, he's curious, and he leans against the counter with a rarely seen slouch, as if he has nothing else better to do than stay here and let Tony be confused at him. Steve says, "Do you think any of this would be enough to make it up to you?" Tony inhales sharply. "Steve, not trying to pick a fight, I promise." Steve sounds calm, tired, but mostly calm, like he's already had this discussion in his head and is okay with however it plays out in the real world. "All that's done and over. We shook on it." "Exactly. And because it's all done, this," Steve gestures at himself, the bowl, the compound, "has nothing to do with that." "Then what is it?" "This is how I should have always been with you," Steve says. "Before. I should have been better at listening to you." Tony turns away, cursing his lack of glasses. They're on a table somewhere, being useless precisely when they're needed, because the last thing Tony needs is for Steve to see him be fucking overwhelmed by a simple statement. A simple statement that brushes up against the truth, rubbing at it like a raw nerve, because that is what Tony always wanted. And in his failing to get it, he'd had to fall back on frustration, anger, and pig-headed determination to do it his way by himself if necessary. He wanted Steve to understand. And the fact that Steve didn't just meant that they were too different, too stubborn, too set in their ways. They'd never, ever meet each other in the middle. It's almost rude for Steve to say it out loud like this today, as if it was always that simple. "Wasn't so good at explaining myself either, ironically." Tony rubs his knuckles against his forehead, buying time. "That's how it rolls, I guess. I can back off." Steve doesn't apologize, which is good, because Tony would probably punch him in the face if he tried. "Why now?" Tony says, his voice cracking. He clears his throat, but it doesn't help much with the sudden clog. "Why are you now?" "If something's worth doing, then it's worth doing even if you're late about it." Tony finally looks at Steve, appalled at the Hallmark card platitude. But Steve's face, gazing at Tony as if he never stopped looking at him, is open and sincere. He means it, and is not going to qualify it in any way, shape, or form. Tony's never seen Steve carry himself less like a soldier, curved towards him like a closing parenthesis, as if Tony can just reach over and touch. Tony can barely stand it. Steve just doesn't look at him like that, with such, as if he... "I can back off," Steve says again, worried now, "if it's bothering you." "You're right. All I wanted was for you to listen." Tony swallows. Nothing more embarrassing than assuming that everyone else is as invested as you are in a group project, only to find out you're wrong in the most public way. That's it. That was the heart of it. Steve nods slowly. "I'm trying to now." "Geez." Tony exhales shakily. "The worst part, the very worst part of this, is that I want you to." Steve frowns. "Yes, you just said, I mean, I like it," Tony hisses. "I like when you're like this. I like it when you're like this with me. And that's bad because it's messing with my head. And look, I accepted what it'd take to come back here to work with you again. We've survived the worst possible consequences of what it means to be us, to be me and you, you and me. And we're smarter now. We know how to navigate each other, how to take the best parts of what we can be, to hopefully save the universe. But it has its limits, Steve. You can't give this to me now, this thing I wanted then, because it's going to..." "It's going to what?" Steve asks quietly. What answer can Tony give him? The sad slope of Steve's mouth is soft and devastating, so Tony kisses him. "There. That's it." Steve makes a shocked sound. Oh, that lands warm on Tony's lips. For a second, Tony even thinks that Steve kisses him back, but it must be wishful thinking, because Steve's hands suddenly land on Tony's upper arms, and he pushes Tony away, gently but firmly. Tony, I don't think you really want this. Tony blinks. What? I think... Steve's voice is kind, but his brow is furrowed as he tracks Tony's face. I think that you're trying to see how far you can push me. Tony doesn't answer. Steve's hands loosen their grip, though luckily not before Tony has his feet solidly back under him. Even now, Steve doesn't know. Tony's kissed him, and Steve doesn't know. It's almost a relief. Tony can take the out, no harm done. I did like doing that back in the day, Tony says distantly. Messing with you to get a rise. Petty shit. But this isn't like that, Steve says thoughtfully. You're just trying to figure out how to deal with me. The changed circumstances, all of it. Yeah. Tony mostly says it, just to fill the silence, rather than because he agrees. He sees where Steve's coming from, and of course Steve would be worried about Tony's state of mind, as if Tony cannot process Steve's being nice to him. Well, that's also true, but it's not all of it. Tony looks at the bowl, waiting forlornly on the counter. I don't think I ever made popcorn with you back at the tower. No, Steve says. The popcorn was usually Natasha, sometimes Clint. Once Thor, Tony says, smiling at the memory. I should get back out there. Hopefully Nebula hasn't split. And I came for the, Steve looks around, trash bag. Right, thanks. Steve smiles sheepishly and follows Tony out of the room. That should be that. And Tony should let it go. But it's tough when Steve is existing in the same space as him, being so very Steve. The mere presence of him keeps alive and active the Steve-centric thoughts knocking around Tony's skull. Dinner is fine. Nebula finishes her popcorn and steals more from Rhodey's helping. Scott stands on the table and declares that he's got it, where it is the idea to use their presumably working time travel tech to travel to just before Thanos slaps his fingers and steal it from him. The debate on why that won't work goes well after everyone's finished dessert. Tony participates in the discussion, of course, but that doesn't mean he's also not thinking about Steve. Specifically, he's thinking about something Steve said, which Tony hadn't parsed properly when he heard it. Being hyper-aware of Steve is the opposite of new. Tony's brain was wired that way from the very start, thanks to Howard-related baggage that wasn't Steve's fault. Tony figures that he was always going to be drawn to Steve because of that. But if Steve wasn't also so very human, and the times they actually synced up together so very amazing, Tony's interest would have petered out ages ago. Dead in the water as soon as something else more interesting came along. But as it was, Tony kept turning back towards Steve again and again, pulled by a strange mix of admiration, resentment, and fascination. Tony wasn't in love with him. It never got that far, he's pretty sure. But he yearned. The way that his Iron Man years had been nothing but yearning for the next armored suit that's faster, smarter, more sophisticated. A perpetual chase, no destination required. Having his third eye almost constantly turned in Steve's direction was exciting, but it was also safe. Steve would never look at Tony the same way, so Tony's expectations of the man were simple. A decent friendship. Or failing that, a functional and occasionally fun working relationship. Reality had its own idea, of course. Ticking time bomb, etc. For all that Steve split Tony's symbolic heart right open, at least he didn't know about that one last piece that Tony kept out of play. There were few things Tony got to cling on to in the aftermath of the Avengers implosion, but that was one of them, and he was grateful. In time, he even got to move on. He worked through Rhodey's recovery, and then his own after the Battle of Titan. He made a serious go of it with Pepper, which he doesn't regret, even if it didn't ultimately work out. He had Morgan, for whom he'd rewrite the universe for. He kept the Avengers name alive long enough for Natasha to take over, hoping that even if his team never got back together, the idea would live on for others in the future. As for Steve, there was no forgetting that he existed out in the world somewhere, but that fact became less important as time went by. Tony had his catharsis, and that was that. So while Tony wasn't looking, Steve became this. Still Steve, still righteous, still determined, but older, weary, lost in thought a lot of the time, even as, just as he's doing right now, he listens to Bruce spill out how they don't know how many initial tests they'll need to do to confirm that time travel is possible in the first place, and that their heist plan will depend on how many PIM particles they'll have left to use. When did Steve become like this? During the post-apocalypse years, of course, which changed everyone. They'd seen each other a couple of times since Tony's return from Titan, but those moments were always brief, perfunctory. And then after Morgan arrived, Tony avoided him even more, fearing, knowing, that the day Steve sought him out on purpose would be a point of no return, where Tony would have to choose between staying with Morgan and fighting for her. The fact that he kissed Steve today should feel more world-shaking, but it's anticlimactic after everything else they've been through. The misunderstandings, the betrayals, the end of the world. What's more surprising than a kiss is the realization that Steve's been thinking about Tony. He's been thinking about Tony a lot. It's a strange thing for Tony to be aware of when he'd assumed that Steve just, well, thought as little as possible about him at all. Tony taps his elbow to Rhodey, snapping Rhodey out of the glazed, judgmental stare that is his resting face. I'm about to do something really dumb, Tony says. The noise in the room is loud enough that no one's paying them any attention, but he still keeps his voice low. Not definitely really dumb, but possibly really dumb. Do you want me to stop you or encourage you? Rhodey replies. Just hang around, in case I need an assist. Or scrape me off the floor, whichever. Right. Rhodey clears his throat. This is about Steve, yeah? Wish it wasn't. Like I'm a fucking glutton for punishment. Would have put that the other way round, actually. Tony looks at Rhodey sharply, but Rhodey just shrugs. Whatever happens over the next few days could be really good or really bad. Knife's edge stuff. Tony sighs. Yeah. Rhodey taps his fist against Tony's arm. Not encouragement, but acknowledgement. Here they are. And they're handling universe-changing choices already. So why not face some relatively smaller ones as well? An opportunity comes when Steve gets up to fetch some water from the side table. Tony rises off the couch to make his own way there, as casually as he can manage. It says a lot about the current state of things that Steve doesn't jump at Tony's appearance by his side. He merely offers to fill Tony's mug, and Tony shakes his head. Small team versus everyone going, Tony says. What do you think? Assuming we have enough PIM particles left, I think everyone wants the chance to go, Steve said. Everyone wants to be part of it. But are you for it or not? I think we have no idea what it'll take to pull this off. We barely know what this is, beyond getting our hands on the Infinity Stones. While said stones are as far away from Thanos as they can be, Tony says. Mapping tomorrow? Assuming the test with Clint goes okay. Sounds good. I have another question. Tony waits, just long enough that Steve twigs a change of topic. Just now in the kitchen, you said that you think I don't really want that. Steve nods stiffly and busies himself taking a slow sip of his glass. This might be the first time since Tony returned to the compound that Steve's having trouble meeting his gaze. Interesting, that. You didn't say anything about what you want, Tony points out. Steve's no was on Tony's behalf instead of his own. So, what do you want, Steve? There it is again. The soft, steady blue of Steve's eyes as they hold Tony's. Tony still doesn't know where he put his glasses. Steve says very quietly, I already have it. Once again, Steve comes in with the fucking curveball. Right, Tony hears himself say. He knows what Steve means because it's as familiar as his fucking reflection. Steve wants this. The two of them existing together, not hating each other, actual warmth between them, as if they know how to be friends. And it fucking hurts to know this is about Steve, because Tony wanted this years ago. He wanted and wanted and wanted, until he finally learned to quit. But did he quit completely? From the way his heart's hammering in his rib cage, that might not be the case. Tony, Steve says. Give me a second, Tony says hoarsely. If Steve keeps smiling all sad like that, Tony might just die. He needs to stop doing it, and the only thing Tony can think of to stop him doing that is to grab Steve's wrist. So he does. Tony holds it as though it's a lifeline, squeezing tight and desperate, until he can feel the thumping pulse of Steve's heartbeat inside his knuckles. How long do they stay like that? 5 seconds? 5 minutes? Thor has roused himself and is having a friendly argument with Bruce about space travel and the effects it can have on squishy, non-enhanced human beings. I'm asking, Tony says at last. If you're not interested, that's okay, but I'm asking. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, or the day after, or if any of this time travel mucking about is going to make a difference. But I do know that I'm going to call it a night and head up to my room, and you can join me if you want. Surprise widens Steve's eyes. Caution follows, and then uncertainty. You're supposed to be paying attention now, aren't you? Tony says. Steve nods slowly. I'm trying to. This is the moment to make an exit. Tony releases Steve's hand and walks away, feeling like he's hauling lead with every step towards the doorway. He has enough sense of mind to glance across the room at Rhodey. They nod at each other. It's okay. And the motion at least allows Tony to ignore the impulse to check if anyone else is watching, and if anyone will draw a connection between Tony's talking to Steve before leaving and whatever it is that Steve's doing right now, gazing mournfully at his glass of water, maybe. No one would judge, but there'd definitely be one or two persons thinking, that's just like Tony and Steve, finding new ways to get up to their usual bullshit. The corridor outside is quiet, and the lights switch on as Tony approaches. At the elevator, Tony's alone at the doors for 5, maybe 8 seconds. Then Steve arrives at his side, announcing himself with little more than a shift in the air. He doesn't even shuffle his feet. The elevator doors open and they enter. Tony presses the button for his floor. Some small talk could be useful here, or maybe not so small talk, such as Tony asking Steve to clarify his intentions in as much detail as possible. Is this going to be a friendly fuck? A curious fuck? Does Steve really truly understand what's going to happen here? Or is he just rolling with it to see how it plays out? Does Steve want him carnally? And here Tony's brain struggles with the slippery thought. And if yes, is it a spontaneous want that only came into being when Tony kissed him in the kitchen? Or is it something else? Tony can't imagine the answers to any of these questions making a difference. He may be curious, but he doesn't need to know right this instant. If only because there's so many times a guy can get overwhelmed in one evening before his brain shuts down entirely. Still, he wonders, just as he wonders if he's making yet another mistake, because why the fuck couldn't he have just left it alone? By the time they step out onto the floor, Tony's brain is already racing a mile a minute. Panic and second-guessing, tumbling together like a car crash. Tony, Steve says. Tony turns. Steve's hands settle warm and gentle on the sides of Tony's face. Tony is startled by the intensity in Steve's dark eyes, though that thought derails entirely when Steve kisses him. The press of Steve's lips is firm and unmistakable. Here I am. It's so unexpected that Tony staggers a little, unprepared, just as he's unprepared for the way Steve tilts his head just so, deepening the kiss, as though it's something he's wanted for a while, too. Steve has feelings. It's delicious, languid, heated. Steve kisses like he's afraid that Tony's going to disappear. His hands are hesitant but warm, traversing the planes of Tony's body and holding him close. Tony clings to Steve's back and presses in, unwilling to break the kiss until he's absolutely lightheaded. It goes on for a decently long time. Steve's hard in his slacks.
"Do you want to?"
Steve says, his lips moving against Tony's as he speaks.
"Your room?"
Yeah, let's... He takes Steve's hand and off they go, down the hallway to the room of new sheets and a turned-over mattress. It's not as awkward as it should be. They undress, eyeing their fill of each other as they do, and Tony finds that he doesn't care that his body's changed a lot. It never quite filled out the same way after Titan, but it doesn't matter. This is what he's got to work with, and it's a nice bonus, though not necessary, that Steve's into it. The man seems only able to stop looking at Tony when he's busy kissing him. On the bed, Tony pulls Steve on top of him, murmuring, "Watch the left shoulder, yeah? It's not so good." They kiss until Tony's mouth aches, until Steve's hair is completely mussed up, until Steve's hard cock drags wet lines back and forth across Tony's hip. Tony has the stray thought that he should be at least a little bit afraid. Steve's hands roaming over his chest shouldn't feel this good, as if Tony's own body is betraying him. But when Tony tries to grab at that feeling, it's too muted, distant. The here and now is too rich, too vibrant, too distracting. Tony wants only to claw at Steve's shoulders and hold him close, their bodies rocking together. One of Steve's hands is at the curve of Tony's waist, squeezing rhythmically. Tony takes that hand and guides it lower between Tony's legs. Steve makes a sound at the back of his throat. Not a bad sound, a mix of questioning and turned on, and rubs his thumb curiously at where Tony's inviting him in. Tony has, of course, wondered what it would be like to have sex with Steve. He'd lived under the same roof as the guy for a while, so it was only natural to contemplate it, thought exercises and all that. Tony figured that if it ever happened, it'd probably be fun, energetic, and maybe a little kinky. Or it could be rough and furious if they were in one of those phases where they were at each other's throats. He never thought that it'd be like this, slow and careful. And Tony's chest is so full that he can barely speak. The most he can manage are murmured encouragements. "Slowly. Deeper. Wait, let me turn over first." And then there's just sensation. There's the curling heat low in his belly, stoked by Steve's kisses at his shoulders. Steve's body blanketing Tony's back. Steve's cock filling him up over and over. Somewhere in the motions of back and forth, Tony realizes that Steve's shaking. His thrusts are steady, but his breath is hitching. And then there's a choked-off sound that tightens Tony's stomach. Tony cranes his neck to look over his shoulder and sees Steve scrunched his eyes shut. It seems impossible that Tony ever thought this man made of ice. Not when dozens of emotions twist his face now. Regret, relief, tenderness, disbelief. Tony reaches back with one hand and squeezes Steve's waist. "I know," Tony says. "It's a lot. It feels right. It seems like it can't be really happening. It's suffocating. As if all the years and mistakes and connections that never were have teamed up to press on them, vice-like. It's wonderful." "I know," Tony says again, "just because." Steve laughs low and hoarse. His eyes open and meet Tony's in the dim light. He's still shaking. "Of course you do." He breathes deep, following Tony's lead, and then rolls his hips against Tony's ass, steadying himself. "Let's just..." Tony licks his lips, words failing him. It's always been difficult for him to focus when he's stretched full. and it being Steve who's doing it just makes it worse. It seems like every muscle twitch has Steve's dick sending lightning up Tony's insides. This is good, yeah?
Yes.
Steve plants a biting kiss at Tony's shoulder blade.
God, yes.
There's no rush. Not tonight, at least. Steve fucks him until Tony's dizzy with it, and then some, moaning into the pillow and humping Steve's hand desperately. The orgasm is wrung out of him in what feels like an endless loop of sensation, inside and out and back again, that he almost misses Steve's final spasmic thrusts, topped off by an exhale that sounds like Steve's emptying his whole lungs. The aftershocks aren't bad either. Steve rolls off of him, and they lie there together. Tony turns his head on the pillow to take in the scenery, i.e., one beautifully flushed Steve Rogers, who offers a twitching, self-conscious smile. What a sight. You gotta help me find my glasses, Tony says. I know I had it when we were setting up the suit tests.
Don't you have a way of tracking it?
Yes, I do. Steve's smile deepens, and Tony responds in kind. Okay, I'll find your glasses. They get up and clean themselves in the bathroom. Tony pulls his shorts on before getting back in bed, but Steve just goes back under the covers, buck naked. They talk a little about nothing in particular. Dinner, Natasha's hair, flight permits for the Benatar. It's nice. Steve's sweet. Tony's feeling pretty good in general. On that last note, it does occur to Tony that he could feel bitter that they never did this before. But maybe they couldn't have, not until they became the people that they are right now. Oh, shit. Tony scrambles for his phone, swiping quickly to get to his messages. Shit, God damn it. I didn't say goodnight to Morgan.
Was she expecting a call? Steve asks.
Well, no, but I like to surprise her. Tony sighs when he reads the last message from Pepper, complete with photos. Yeah, she's having a fun time. Forgot all about her old man, as usual.
Look at you.
Steve rubs his fingers up and down Tony's forearm lazily. You're so good at that. Maybe, I guess, relatively speaking. Tony puts his phone down and, reminded of the stakes they have in front of them, considers the situation. Steve doesn't say anything, having somehow recognized that it's Tony's turn to fill the quiet. This has to work, Tony says. What we're doing, to bring back everyone we lost, it has to work. But I won't give up what I already have as a trade-off. I know that's...
I understand, Steve says. I won't let that happen.
Okay. Tony nods to himself. Okay, then if it works out, big if, but if it does, then maybe afterward, would you like to come see her? Morgan, I mean. Properly. The place by the lake is very roomy. You can visit if you want to. If that's something you might. Steve saves Tony from the stuttering invitation by rising off the mattress to kiss him. The kiss is firm, but the way Steve wraps his arms around Tony's body is even firmer.
Yes, Steve breathes.
And Tony hears everything else stacked behind that one word. Yes, he wants to visit Morgan.
Yes,
he wants to see more of Tony.
Yes,
he wants to make something out of this after it's all over, even if spending more time together would mean unearthing difficult questions with their difficult answers.
Yes,
he wants to carry this with him. A token to hold on to, as to go out to save half the universe. Tony exhales.
Good.
The end.